We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. Brought to you by AT&T, a proud supporter of Carolina Athletics.
We're back, time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you in the Mobile Pod World headquarters. Adam, the magic of the Mobile Pod World headquarters is its mobility. And so it can really be anywhere.
Hence the word mobile.
Yeah. I am as comfortable, I think, as I've ever been doing the pod right now.
Yeah, you look like you might take a nap.
Lap of luxury.
You look like it's like Sunday afternoon and you're watching an NFL game and you're going to sleep through the second and third quarter and then wake up for the fourth and act like you watched the whole thing.
Like the 49ers are going against the Rams.
Yeah, like this Joe Montana, he always pulls it out. I didn't see the second quarter, but it looks like he threw a few incompletions.
Where are we right now? You never know.
Could be right behind you. Turn around quick!
But we are excited to be here.
The Mobile Pod World headquarters has moved around a lot lately. Like, just here lately, it's been very diverse.
Yeah. And part of that diversity is with our awesome show coming up today when we're going to talk about the victory over Clemson. It was tight. It was weird. Weird game. Talk about that. We'll look ahead to BC coming up tonight, 8 o'clock in Chestnut Hill. Really, I think the crown jewel of Adam's travel list, Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. And Adam, really fun guest and a good interview. Despite the interviewers, this one's pretty good.
Yeah, this interviewee was able to overcome the questions he was asked.
So Pierce Landry is going to join us, and I think if you're a Tar Heel fan of maybe a certain like 35 to 45, you immediately know Pierce Landry. And maybe you, if you're, maybe you do, maybe you don't know Pierce. Pierce was a significant member of the 1995 Final Four team for the Tar Heels. He had a cameo, as you'll hear in the interview, of the 93 National Championship team, and has gone on to an extraordinarily successful career in finance. You know, Pierce looks like he's like 25 years old, beautiful wife, good-looking kids who are successful. Really, somebody who you can really not like, except for he's so likable. So we really enjoyed talking to Pierce. Really good dude, and we had a lot of fun with him. So that interview is coming up soon.
I feel like there's even room for a part two with Pierce. Like, I think there's more.
Oh, no doubt.
There's more in the tank.
We could, we were up against the clock a little bit with that interview. So we had more we wanted to do. So maybe we can get a part two, and you're going to enjoy that coming up here in just a little bit. Adam probably has a list. I don't know that, but I'm going to safely assume that it's a possibility. And who knows? I'm sure other hilarious things will occur too. So, Adam, let's start with Clemson on Saturday night. I think we figured it was going to be a competitive game. which we'll get to in a second. But obviously, the bigger, biggest story coming out of that game for Carolina, in addition to just winning, was having to do so without Roy Williams. Coach Williams had a vertigo spell late in the first half. We've seen that happen twice, one that is severe enough to cause him to need to leave the floor. Two things struck me about it. Three things. One, how initially alarming it was, because I do think just kind of the way Coach Williams fell down, the fact that there was a police officer who, hey, credit to him, he was doing his job. And you always have somebody from the opposing area who is kind of assigned to make sure that the coach doesn't have any danger. And that gentleman, and I don't know his name, was immediately on top of things. So that's number one. Number two and 2A, though, is kind of then after you realized, okay, this is what it is, how unaffected Steve Robinson was, and then how unaffected the Tar Heels were. And I think that's a credit to Steve Robinson. It's a credit to the seniors on Carolina's team. And in an odd way, a credit to Coach Williams, too, for having those guys so prepared that if this does happen, and again, it's a rare occurrence and you never want to see it, but if it does occur, that they did it affect their play? I'm sure it did some, but not so much that it took them out of the game.
Yes, all of what you said is true. We were both there when the previous in-game bad one occurred at Boston College, coincidentally enough, in 2016. And I don't remember ever thinking that was anything other than what it was. And it was very similar last night, because like it was right across the court from us. Mm-hmm. We were across from the benches and sort of in-game action. But I immediately thought, oh, he's having one of the vertigo things. The Clemson game, I think it was because of the police officer and the fact that Sterling Manley was at the scores table. I know that's so weird to remember, but Sterling Manley was at the scores table, and I remember thinking, oh, that's great. Here comes Bigster. I've missed Bigster, and I'm glad he's coming in the game. And then kind of out of the right corner of my eye, I saw Brad Brownell pointing at the Carolina bench. I was like, hold on a second, Brad Brownell. Kennedy Meeks isn't over there. Plus, you and I had a nice chat pregame, and I was talking about how nice you are. Just simmer down. So then I look back, Sterling's still there. I'm like, oh, we're going to see Bigster. Then I finally get to the left corner of my eye, and there's a police officer standing over the Carolina bench with Coach Williams on the ground.
Yeah.
And I guess that just seemed different. That police officer was on it.
Yes.
I mean, and as much as I'm saying that kind of made it different, he was doing exactly what he was supposed to be doing.
Oh, yeah.
It's my fault for taking it that way. But you've just seen enough sporting events where weird things have happened, and then you need law enforcement, that you don't think that police officer is there because of a vertigo attack.
Right.
But of course he was, because he didn't know. So, and then kind of the coaches all huddled around Coach Williams because they all knew what to do. And then Kenny Williams pulled every single player a few feet. Like, Kenny Williams was like the dad.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, kids, come on over here.
Everything's going to be fine.
Don't you worry.
Yeah.
The adults are going to handle that over there. I'm going to bring you guys over here, and I'm going to give you a popsicle.
He's like the older brother who was getting everything organized while dad was taking care of things over there.
Yeah. I'll give you a popsicle, and we'll go to the playground. We'll go down the slide.
You don't even need to look at it.
Everything's going to be totally fine. There's only 55 seconds left. Let's go make a three, and everything will be fine. And in all, we're kind of making jokes about it. But those 55 seconds ended up being important. Carolina added 2 points to the lead in that stretch and then won the game by two.
Yeah.
So if you fall apart in those 55 seconds, you probably lose the game.
I think it's easy to forget that Steve Robinson knows what he's doing. I mean, I don't mean it that way, but has been a head coach. And, I mean, it's not unusual. While he's a couple years removed from it, he knows what he's doing. And, you know, of course, was very successful at Tulsa, had a good run at Florida State. He's coached in the ACC. He obviously knows Roy Williams and knows Carolina and all those things at this point. And there's just not many places where you can go, okay, you've lost your Hall of Fame head coach. Let's now have this very successful Division I coach can now slide in and take over. And Coach Williams was effusive in his praise of Steve Robinson after the game, and as everyone should have been. That transition, I think, could have really been damaging just because, of course, it could be. But it was not. And so credit to all involved. And, of course, the big part of this is, thank goodness Coach Williams is fine, that it was nothing more than what it was. And actually, just I think in hearing him talk a little bit after the game, it seemed like the one that happened at Boston College in 2016 was worse for him personally. He felt worse when that one occurred than he did on this one. I don't think it affected him quite as strongly physically this time. And he even said in the post game that, you know, he probably could have gone back out there, but didn't want to upset the apple cart and get out there and mess things up. And, you know, he was on the plane and was fine. And so it seemed like, fortunately, it was not quite as severe as the previous one.
I think that speaks, too, to the type of relationship they have, that he was feeling better in the second half in a close game, but felt fine with Steve Robinson being in charge, and whatever happened, happened, and if the Tar Heels won, that'd be great, and if the Tar Heels lost, he understood that also, but he trusted Steve Robinson to do it. And as we know, like every other Hall of Fame person in every other career there is, Coach Williams likes to be in control. And the fact that he was willing to let Steve Robinson do that, I thought, speaks to their relationship just as much as the way he talked about him did. I think it was probably helpful to have halftime because it's not just Steve Robinson who's – like. I think it's a little easier to go from where Steve Robinson usually is to where Steve Robinson moved into than maybe like Brad Frederick. Okay, what are now Brad Frederick's responsibilities as compared to what they were? So everybody was able to kind of figure out what piece they were going to fill. And that was probably pretty beneficial. Coach Robinson made some great calls down the stretch, half-court offense. Carolina came out of halftime with a great call. They ran slip and got an easy dunk for Garrison Brooks. That play works all the time.
I feel like it does.
Garrison Brooks told me after the game, I said, Garrison, does that work as much as I think it does? And he goes, yes. And he said it's just a read, and he said they always play him the same way when he sets that screen, and so it's almost always there. And, of course, because he is a little gerb, he gave a lot of credit to Kenny Williams. He said Kenny always throws that pass perfectly, and the Tar Heels ran it twice in the second half.
And the second time, the pass was a little too far, and it was a great effort by him to save it on the baseline. I think it was to Kobe White maybe in the corner, and then Kobe – got it to Cam, or the opposite. I think he saved it to Cameron Johnson. Yeah, and then Johnson passed it up to Kobe White for an open three. So that was really good effort by him on that play.
And that was when it was a one-point game.
Yeah,
when that second instance happened.
Just last thing about the stuff with Coach Williams, then we can talk more about the game itself. I think credit to Brad Brownell and to the Clemson fans. Not that you would expect them to somehow be negative, but Brad Brownell, as you said, was on it. He alerted the officials, was like, hey, stop the action. Something's going on over here. And then the Clemson fans were extraordinarily classy and, you know, gave Coach Williams a standing ovation as he was being helped off the court. And so just nice to see people handle it in the proper way.
We kind of joked about Brad Brownell's pregame interview. In general, I really like Brad Brownell. He seems like a very normal guy,
yeah,
who happens to be really good at coaching basketball. And I thought that came out then. And I think, too, even in the handshake line, when you watch it on TV – you can see he's just suffered a heartbreaking loss that his team really needed to win, and he's probably a little upset about how it ended. And he takes time to ask Steve Robinson, is Roy Williams okay? Mm-hmm. And Coach Robinson clearly says, yes, he's okay. And then they talked again after sort of the media part of the post game. So this shouldn't be surprising, but it is sometimes. He just acted like a normal guy you would hope would act,
mm-hmm.
and that's nice to see sometimes. And Clemson fans, in general, I think Clemson fans are great. It may be because we don't go down there much in football and don't have to endure that.
Right.
But I just always – I like Clemson.
As far as the game itself, Adam, I kind of think both teams just kind of played to their strengths, and Carolina ended up with some more points in the end. The Tar Heels shot from the outside – at a higher rate than they have been. They had multiple guys make key baskets. Now, of course, Coby White and Cameron Johnson were the two who were the best and the most consistent in this game. But Kenny Williams had some big baskets late, hit some key free throws. Luke May had a stretch where he scored six straight, hit a three, and then got a bucket and a foul in a key portion of the game when Carolina was really struggling offensively. Even Garrison, and I don't mean even Garrison Brooks, but Brooks had a big shot that I think could get lost when Carolina had gone 7 minutes or something without a field goal, hit a little 15-foot baseline jumper late in the shot clock, and made a smart play where he had an open three late in the shot clock. Garrison has not taken a three in his Carolina career, made an extra pass to Cameron Johnson, who was more covered than Garrison Brooks is, but is a better three-point shooter than Garrison Brooks is. So just different guys making big plays. And offensive rebounding, while Carolina didn't dominate in the rebounding, they did out-rebound Clemson, but they had some big ones late and extended some possessions when Carolina was trying to burn clock, gave themselves extra opportunity to score. So you saw all that. You saw Clemson play really good defense around the rim, where you gave the great stat to us during the radio broadcast that they were second in the ACC, top 10 in the nation in two-point field goal defense. Now, they've struggled some in three-point defense, and you saw that too. But around the rim, they are as tough as anybody in the league, and their key guys made big plays. Elijah Thomas played well. Marquise Reed, who seems to always play well against the Tar Heels, had 25, I think, in the game. He's as good in the mid-range as anybody in the conference. And so just both teams doing what they do well in a good basketball environment, and Carolina ended up being able to hold on for a big win.
It really was such a strange good win, because Carolina went through these stretches where they couldn't put the ball in the hoop that were long extended parts of the game. I think if you add together the first half drought and the second half drought, it was over 14 minutes where Carolina made one basket. So that's almost half the game where you only made one basket. But then there were also stretches like there were in the second half where there was the play you talked about. Then there was the Kenny Williams jumper when he got fouled, made the jumper, and then Coby White went all like Muhammad Ali on him in the celebration.
Funny side note, we were so when you go to Clemson, Carolina does fly, but you've got to fly into Greenville, Spartanburg area.
I like Greenville, baby Charleston.
Yeah, because the Clemson does have an airport, but it is not large enough for the type of plane that Carolina would be traveling in. So there is this 45-minute drive that you have to do to get to the airport. And so, yeah, obviously everybody was happy, and there was some chattering. But then all of a sudden, Kenny Williams goes, "Hey, Coby, hey, you actually hurt me pretty good." He was, and Coby was like, "Oh, man, sorry, man, just all excited in the moment." I mean, so I think Coby White maybe hit Kenny Williams a little harder than he meant to.
And then there was the Luke May to Coby White backdoor. And then there was the play where Coby White was penetrating and then kind of dumped it off to Luke May for the basket. That all happened in like a minute and a half. So there were these periods of terrible offense followed by, oh, this looks great. And then Cam Johnson would come along and have two guys on him and be 25 feet away and just toss it in. So what a strange game, but that's what Clemson does to you. They want to not let you do what you want to do. And I mean, Carolina's in great shape for the last week of the regular season. If we had been sitting here in the Mobile Pond World headquarters on January 1st and given ourselves this scenario, we would have said, that sounds great. We'll take it.
I wonder why Clemson's now 17-12. It feels like they should be better than that. And that's not a knock on that. Maybe they're one score away or one more big guy or something. They're close to being really good, I feel like.
Elijah Thomas looks like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Well, he and Reed both play great against Carolina, and I don't know if they – and their numbers are good, and they are good ACC players for sure. But any time that Tar Heels have seen them, they have both played really, really well.
Well, even their backup big guy looked pretty good. For
Javon White.
In like backup big guy land, he was one of the better ones Carolina's seen.
As far as the final play, Clemson thought there was a foul. Yeah, I've looked at it a couple of times, and I do think Coby White did not foul on the play. I think he cleanly took the ball away from Shelton Mitchell. there was contest. Shelton Mitchell and Garrison Brooks ran into each other. But two things. For the most part, there was a lot that was a physical game where a lot of physical play was allowed to occur. There was one play, I didn't realize at the time, the play where Brandon Huffman got the offensive rebound, put it back up and missed it, and then Nasir Little ended up getting 3 points. I mean, Huffman got like hit in the face when he was going back up for his putback when Thomas tried to block it and came down right in his face, and there was no whistle. Now, there was a whistle a second later, and it turned out terrific for a 3-point play. But so anyway, there was just a lot of contact in the game. But more importantly than that, I think Shelton Mitchell was out of control. And I think had it been a more under control drive, I think maybe he gets that call. Because if they had blown the whistle, I think you would have gone, okay, yeah, I mean, there was contact. But I think you could also say, okay, yeah, I see where they didn't call it because of how wildly he was running into the two Tar Heels. Then a couple other things. The clock stopped. I didn't even realize it at the time because when Kenny Williams threw it into the backcourt, I was like, man, he threw that into the backcourt really early because then Clyde Trapp ended up getting it and had a kind of a Hail Mary heave at least shot. But in bizarro world, if somehow that shot went in, I think eventually it doesn't count because that clock stopped for like a second and a half. I don't know if the clock keeper, the timekeeper, was anticipating a whistle for the foul or what, but it was just kind of a odd, messy ending.
It really was strange. And first of all, what an awesome play by Coby White to catch the ball as he's falling out of bounds and save it back in. Who thinks of doing that? That's
twice from his backside. He's made good plays here in recent games.
That very easily, even if they don't call a foul, could have been Clemson ball under their own basket with a couple seconds left.
Yeah.
Or more than that, really. The thing about the clock stopping, the more I think about it, the more I think that's why Kenny Williams threw the ball down to the other end of the court, because he wouldn't normally have done that with that amount of time. I suspect, and at some point we'll talk to him about it, if only someone had asked him this on the radio last night or on Saturday night. I think that he's got the clock in his head, and I think he just kind of had thought when they inbounded the ball, there's this much time, and it's running in his head. He gets it, he throws it, and he thinks the clock's going to run out as this ball's in the air, which it should have done.
Right.
So I think he didn't even look, because I think if he had looked, I don't think you'd do the same thing, because, of course, the clock's not going to run out with that length of time. It was very odd how it stopped, and how fascinating that would have been if they had had to go. Let's say that heave had gone in. Do they even realize and go back to review it? And if they do, that can't count.
No.
But how do you get out of Oconee County or whatever it's called alive if you change that? So it was just an odd sequence. But overall, what it really was an awesome play by Coby White.
I do think they would have checked it because I know at least Steve Kirshner, Tar Heel Associate AD for Communications, Tar Heel SID for Basketball, he was aware of it. Mm. So someone would have been made aware.
Right.
Had that long court, I mean, and it didn't really come close to going in. It was a one-handed just football pass that hit the shot clock. Speaking of football passes, what a terrific pass by Luke May. And I even think I said on the radio, I was like, oh, my goodness, they're going for the long – something like that. Like, I mean, just the guts to throw that pass and for Kenny Williams to catch it, to not travel after – because that's one where you can kind of be so focused on catching it that then you take a couple of steps to kind of gather your body. It's a really high-difficulty play. And, again, Kenny Williams is struggling right now shooting the ball. He's struggling from three-point range, although he had a couple that, golly, they were like – 80% of the way in and came out against Clemson. But he had some big shots. I mean, they had two long two-point jumpers, one that you talked about when he got fouled. He had the free throws, just some key plays from him late in the game.
I think people underestimate how hard that pass is because they made it look so easy. Mm-hmm. And just college and pro basketball players in general make it look so easy. But it also – I think it's different when it's a set play and you're coming out of the timeout and you say, all right, we're going to try to beat them long. And whoever's throwing the pass has time to get ready, and they know they're going to do it. And, all right, here we go. I'm winding up. Boom, here we go. That was coming out of a made free throw. Luke May just grabbed the ball out of the net, took a step behind the end line, and fired it 60 feet to Kenny Williams, who was lined up on the lane when the shot was taken. So it wasn't like he was back sneakily talking to Steve Robinson and Clemson lost track of him. He was right there when the shot was taken and hustled down the court to make the catch. And both those guys said after the game that they feel like they've done that a million times in practice. And to them, it's like a basic bounce pass from 10 feet away. And we know Luke May comes from a family of people who can throw the ball long distances for very high accuracy. So I guess for him, that's normal. But don't take it for granted. That is not a normal play. Plus, you've now put that on the scouting report. Anybody who plays Carolina for the next month, they're going to tell their team in the huddle, watch Kenny Williams going long, which maybe that enables you to get the ball to Kobe White or Cam Johnson in the backcourt to shoot a couple free throws.
Adam, anything else from the win over Clemson?
No, that was a good win. A lot of weird things seem to happen when Carolina goes to Clemson.
It was a weird game.
I will say one other thing about Little John Coliseum. There were not that many Tar Heels there. There were some, but not like we'll see, you know, tonight at Boston College. Boston Carolina Club, what up? I like their renovation. It's very nice. It's just the right size for them. It was loud in there. And we were seated in front of the student section. But they weren't on top of us.
Right. And there was a security guard who was very active in making sure that there was space. And as student sections go, they were into the game, but it wasn't like overly vulgar or anything like that, which sometimes it can be.
It wasn't like a Georgia Tech situation when we were also in front of the student section. They had done their research on the Tar Heels. They had some creative, kind of funny things to say. They cheered for Clemson. They weren't on our backs like you would be when you sit in front of the student section at some places. So I thought that's exactly how it's supposed to be. There was room for everybody to do what they were trying to do, and nobody got in anybody's way. That's what's supposed to happen.
Adam, you're so happy. So happy with
Now, if the Tar Heels had lost, that whole setup would have been ridiculous. Why don't you move those jerks back 50 feet?
All right. Should we talk to Pierce Landry?
Yes, always.
I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation, so let's get to it. We'll talk a little bit about Pierce when we come back, but our conversation with two-time Final Four member of the national championship team in 93, and as we said, a really key member of that 95 team that made it to all the way to the Final Four, and well, you'll hear about Pierce and the frustration of that as well. But let's hear from former Tar Heel Pierce Landry.
Man, we are excited about hearing some stories today because our guest was here for one of the most fun times in Carolina basketball. Pierce Landry played a game for the 1993 National Champions.
One game.
Hey, it was
that's
the key.
All you got to play.
That's the one that mattered.
55 seconds.
Round that up to a minute. And then also a member of the 94 and the 95 Final Four team. So if you're thinking in your head, let's see, that means he was here with Big Grits.
That's true.
He was here with Jerry Stackhouse. Yeah. He was here with Rasheed Wallace, Jeff McGinnis. I mean, basically, we're just going to open the microphone and let Pierce just talk about that time. But, Pierce, thanks so much for coming by to see us. And kind of catch folks up on what you've been doing since your Tar Heel time, and then we'll work our way back.
Sure. So it's been graduated in 95, so it's been close to 25 years now. Spent about a decade in Charlotte in the finance industry and moved to Greensboro back home for the last 15 years. Got married right out of college to my high school and college sweetheart, Ann, and we have three boys, a sophomore who is here at Carolina playing on the JV team, a senior in high school and a junior in high school, and I continue to be active in the finance industry and involved in a number of things around Greensboro.
How is that almost 25 years ago? Can you answer this magical question?
That is incredible. You know, my knees and my back feel it,
but
mentally
true.
I still feel like it was last week.
I have to think it would be cool for you to have a son playing now on the JV team just to now kind of see that come full circle for you.
It really is special. A lot of my best memories, honestly, at Carolina go back to my freshman and sophomore year where I was slogging it out on the JV court. I mean, we had great coaches and Coach Hanners and Coach Phil Ford. Great memories. I see some guys still around Chapel Hill, a guy named Chris Barnes, who works here at the university. I saw him at a JV game a couple of weeks ago. And we reconnected and remembered some of the times battling Fork Union Military Academy or someone like that, battling in complete anonymity, you know, with no one in the stands, no standings, no press clippings. So to see my son getting to wear a UNC uniform, have a locker in the locker room, practice on the Dean Dome floor, and then get to play and play for Hubert Davis, one of my heroes. Hubert was a senior when I was a freshman. And, you know, Hubert was kind of today's Luke May, right? I mean, yeah. Hubert came in pretty non-recruited or under-recruited, didn't play a lot as a freshman, a sophomore, and suddenly, you know, by his senior year, he's a superstar and multi-year NBA career and a great man of faith, as you know. And so for my son to get to play for him is kind of really brings things full circle because I looked up to Hubert big time.
And you get to have kind of a different view of Coach Davis than we do because your son's interacting with him on a daily basis. What has impressed you about Coach Davis as a coach that maybe you didn't know prior to the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, right now my son's a little bit in his doghouse. So
too much shooting?
Probably. Yeah. Like his dad, you know, never saw a shot he didn't like. So, you know, Hubert cares is the first thing. He, you know, he's got a big plate full with varsity, as you guys know better than I do.
Sure.
Recruiting, traveling, scouting, preparing. And yet I've never seen him take one play off as a JV coach. He cares, and he is in their face. He wants them to perform to their, you know, highest ability. And I've been impressed how, in limited practice time, honestly, they don't practice a ton, and their season's pretty short. He gets those guys to execute. You go watch a JV game, and honestly, you see what you learn more of what the varsity's supposed to be doing. You know, varsity has enough athletes to ad lib, and where the JVs obviously are a little less athletic, but they really execute well, and I think that's always a compliment and a sign of a great head coach.
Nobody else has a JV team, at least that I'm aware of. I know for a while Carolina was the only one. What in your mind is the value of that program, and why do you think it's important that Carolina still has it?
Well, I worry that one day some bureaucrat somewhere is going to decide that that's a waste of time and money, and I think it would be a travesty because I think it is a real connection between the student body and what is an all-world elite basketball program. You know, when you look at the JV team, you kind of realize, hey, there's a shot for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, there's a place for me in that program. Any kid who played high school ball has the ability to come and try out, which gives you at least a moment, if not a day or 3 days, on the Smith Center basketball floor wearing a UNC practice jersey and for a moment feeling like he has a connection to Michael Jordan and Dean Smith. And every now and then, obviously, there's a JV player that makes the varsity team and gets to travel, like Caleb this year, and is a great contributor to what the team is able to do. Certainly during my time, I'd see JV players play a key role on the practice squad and get to emulate one of the other team's best offensive players. So I think there's real meaning to it. I think in today's game where you have plenty of transfers that can fill your bench at the varsity squad, there's less need for a JV program. But I hope it always sticks around, and certainly under Coach Williams, his connection back as he was a JV coach, his devotion to Coach Smith, the JV program meant so much to him. I don't see it going anywhere as long as Coach Williams is here.
What do you remember about when you made the jump from JV to varsity? Because you played that one game in 93, so how did that all come about?
Yeah, so I practiced a little bit as a freshman, and then I actually was invited to try out for the team as soon as the freshman season ended. So I spent the spring, some of the summer, playing with the varsity, then all the preseason. And Coach Smith actually called me into his office during tryouts and told me that I was a member of the team my sophomore year, which was the national championship year. Then 24 hours later, after I had my name on the locker, the jersey handed to me, I'd called my parents, my girlfriend Ann, now my wife, saying I made the team. He had to call me into his office and say that I wasn't on the team. And when they turned in the roster to the ACC office with my name on it, they did a little research, and I was fortunate enough to be on a Morehead scholarship. And the ACC at the time counted the Morehead as an athletic scholarship, and it put the team over the max limit. So I still could practice with the team, which I did fairly regularly, but I just couldn't play. And I finally actually heard the story of how it went down from Dave Hanners, Coach Hanners, about 6 months ago. I saw him at one of the reunions. And Coach Hanner said he overheard Coach Smith call the commissioner of the ACC the day before the game I got to play. And he got into a little bit of a heated discussion, which I think was Gene Corrigan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the last comment was made by Coach Smith when he said, "Well, you just watch me." And he hung up because he had just told him that he was going to put me into a non-conference game. And he was, you know, it says a lot about Coach Smith that he would want to reward me with that. And so it was a non-conference game here in the Smith Center against Notre Dame, which, again, at the time was a non-ACC school. And I'd played the entire JV game before, and we went to overtime against Fork Union Military Academy, who had Larry Davis, who ended up being a Tar Heel,
yep,
on it. And so I played the whole JV team game. And after the game, Randy Wheel, the head coach of the JV program, came up to me and said, if the varsity game goes the way it should, which is a blowout, we may tell you to go back and get dressed, and you're going to get a chance to go in the varsity game. And he had mentioned to me before, I was floored. I was like, whatever, oh my gosh. And so sure enough, you know, I just go get on my suit and tie. I think the JV team had to wear a coat and tie back then in the stands, or at least a tie. So I went and got dressed, got in the stands, and we're ranked number one in the nation. Right, we go on to win the national championship that year. Notre Dame was having a mediocre year, so we were probably favored by 20 plus. And at halftime, I think we were up like 2. Like, guys, what are you doing?
This is my chance.
Come on, Montross.
And thankfully, in the second half, they go out to a big lead. And with 10 minutes left, Randy Will turns around in the stands and tells me, go get dressed. So I run out of the stands, go back in the tunnel, and you know, our old equipment manager, Ken, is sitting there with a uniform. And it was number 15, no name on the back. I get dressed. I come out to the bench with about 4 minutes left in the game. And I just kind of run out of the tunnel. The game's going on. I just sit on the end of the bench. And one by one, the varsity guys look down the bench and see me and go, what in the world are you doing out here, Landry? They didn't know. And then with about 2 minutes left, Coach Smith walks down the bench. And at this time, we're about 20 plus. And he kneels down in between George Lynch and Henrik Rodel, who were the senior captains that year. And he said, guys, this is your team. Are you okay with me putting Pierce in the game? And thankfully, I hadn't done anything to tick him off. But again, it tells you something about Coach Smith, where he realized, you know, he always considered the senior captains to be true captains in charge of the team. And thankfully, they said okay. And he put me up at the scorer's table with about a minute and a half left, and he actually had to call timeout with 55 seconds left to get me in the game. And so I get in the game, and in 55 seconds, I think I had a steal, a turnover, a rebound,
hey,
a missed shot.
And box score full, man.
I stuffed it. No points. And actually, if you get the commemorative issue from 1993, the national championship from Sports Illustrated,
yeah,
edition, and it has the team, you know, stats for the year in there, and I'm in there, Pierce Landry, one game, 0 points, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. The author of that article called me a computer blip. Just ones and zeros on the year. To which I was. That was a special memory.
So you said you were talking about JV guys being able to then kind of be fake being great players for other teams when you're in practice. Were you ever somebody that you took super big pride in being in practice?
Oh, yeah. A number of times.
Yeah.
My junior year. Because I wasn't the best athlete. I wasn't the basketball player. I had no business being on the team, really. It was Coach Smith, you know, giving me a chance. And but I could shoot the ball pretty well. And there were a number of times my junior season when I didn't play. I played, I think, 4 meaningful minutes all year, which is a whole other story. But other than that, I was going to get in when we were up 20 or down 20 with a minute left. And yet I was always kind of the best guard on the other team. And so you had guards in the ACC who were pretty good, and I was always the guy who would play that guard, yeah, in the preparation, you know, in the practice before the game. And I had the green light to shoot any shot, you know, when I was that guy.
It was the best.
It honestly was pretty good, you know, pretty good gig. And, you know, whether it was Harold Dean or Corey Alexander at Virginia or Randolph Childress at Wake Forest or whoever it was, I got to be that guy. And you learned the other team's offense and you simulated their plays while the varsity, of course, you know, worked on the defense. And it was just the ability to just shoot it every time. It was kind of nice. nice.
Clearly, you must have done a poor job being Randolph Childress, because the Tar Heels could never stop Randolph Childress, or else you were too good.
I don't know what happened there.
So the four meaningful minutes are a whole other story. What's the whole other story?
Yeah, so again, last player on the bench. I had obviously big dreams that one day I would get on the court, but the idea of that happening, particularly that year when we were the reigning national champions, we were number one again most of the year that year.
Yep.
Deep team, which was one of the problems. We didn't have enough minutes to go around, I think, for everyone. The idea of me getting in was, the last thing on anyone's mind, mine, Coach Smith's for sure. And we went down to LSU for a noon game, national television, ABC, in the, Louisiana Superdome or whatever it is. And, it's a competitive game. I think we were up maybe two or three at half. And with about 4 minutes left in the first half, with a close game, Coach Smith wanders down the bench and says, "Pierce, go get so-and-so." I'm glad I had my uniform on underneath my warm-ups.
I mean, 50-50 chance.
Seriously, there were days where, the guys down at the end of the bench, we would just joke about, why are we even getting dressed? Let's just put our warm-ups on and that's it. And so thankfully I had my uniform on and went in the game and played a pretty good 3.5 minutes and never saw the floor again the rest of the year. But it was just a way, I think, again, for Coach Smith to reward me, maybe whet my appetite a little bit. He knew the next year perhaps he might need me, and he wanted to see, how I might do with a few minutes of real action.
So how do you go from computer blip in 93 to four meaningful minutes in 94 to all of a sudden one of the key guys in 95? How'd that transition occur?
Yeah, well, I always joke that, there are two meaningful parts of that story. One is, and they're not that funny, but a little bit, with the first one.
Adam's not very funny either. We still we were able to make it through on this podcast, so we're good.
Well, one of them is the fact that on the end of the bench the year before with me was a really, really talented guard by the name of Larry Davis. Mm-hmm. And Larry had averaged 44 points a game in high school, had come to Carolina into a very crowded bench. And, I joke that year, next to Larry at the end of the bench, I spent the whole time telling him he should transfer. And, of course, that's not true, but Larry did and ended up having a great career at South Carolina, as you guys know. And he's still a member of the UNC family. Absolutely fantastic guy.
He came to the reunion this summer, which I thought was really cool.
He sure did. And it was great to see him because he is a high-quality individual. So it was the right thing for him to leave and have a wonderful career down at South Carolina. But so Larry transferred. The second one was actually really sad, and it hurt our year big time, and that is that Pat Sullivan blew out his back literally 3 days before the first game. So what went from me maybe being on the cusp of playing a few minutes, and probably with Larry and Pat there, I probably wouldn't have played any. Suddenly Larry transfers, Pat gets hurt, and suddenly in the first game, which was against a top 10 University of Texas team with an All-American guard, with 3.5 minutes into the game, Coach Smith put me into the game. I was the first guy off the bench, and I was as surprised as the other 21,000 people in the arena. I mean, Coach Smith had told me, you need to be prepared. You're going to be playing. And I honestly had been dreaming of that moment, since I was two. And I never really thought it would happen. And then suddenly I was at the table.
So that 95 team had some decent players there in the starting five. I mean, what Stackhouse, Wallace, McGinnis, I have to imagine there's a couple stories there.
Well, it's funny. Just last week was the Duke game. And every time Duke plays Carolina, you guys know the game that gets shown on ESPN. It's the 95 double overtime.
And Jeff Capel hit the shot to win the game.
Apparently.
Right? That's what I saw on ESPN.
Yeah, Duke ESPN would let you want to believe that. It makes you sick. Say, by the way, you know who won that game? And anyway, so that game was going on last week, and I'm in New York on business, and I get a text from my son, who I guess was watching it here on campus, and he said, "Why didn't you ever shoot?" And I replied back saying, "Every time I was on the floor, I was with four people who went to the NBA. I was the last option, and I knew it." And that's just the caliber of talent that was around me. I mean, Rasheed Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse would do things in practice and in games that I knew I had never seen before and didn't know if I ever would. Because, Rasheed, you forget how special he was for his time. I mean, nowadays you got 6'10 guys playing point guard, jumping through the, through the ceiling. But at the time, for someone his size, his reach, his skills, his ability to, I mean, his vertical was 35, 36 inches. He was a rare bird. And he was so unselfish and probably the best teammate I ever had. High quality person.
Anytime we have the current guys on, they always talk about how much they love Rasheed. Even 20 years later, why does everybody love Rasheed Wallace so much?
He genuinely cares for people. One, he's fun-loving. He's jovial. He doesn't take himself too seriously. And he, from all the managers to the walk-ons up to the top, he just genuinely enjoyed being with people. And he's funny. I think we would have won the national championship that year if he had at least a half a selfish bone in his body. I mean, he shot, 68% from the floor? And he would kick it out of the post to people like me. I'm like, Rasheed, we worked hard to get you the ball there. Turn around and put it in the hoop. And he would kick it out because I was hoping. I was like, please don't do that. Yeah, very unselfish. And he was a fun kid. I mean, you know, he was a jokester and a prankster, and he just kept things loose and fun and was a great teammate.
Rasheed Wallace, Jerry Stackhouse, Pierce Landry. A little bit of an odd couple here. I don't know if at the beginning of time those two or that group would have ever been thought of together.
Yeah.
How did you guys all mix together kind of away from the court?
Well, let's be clear. I was really lucky to be a part of that. And, you know, a lot of the bonds get forged your freshman and sophomore year. Back then, living at Granville, now living together. You know, I was living with my best high school friend, David Greaves. You know, we had a great relationship, and we roomed together as a freshman and sophomore, and never dreamed that I'd be a part of the varsity program. So those guys accepted me. Even, you know, after my freshman year when I was trying to walk onto the team that ultimately would have George Lynch and Henrik Rodal as the captains, they really all accepted me. And I think that's the case with every walk-on that's come before me and every walk-on that's come after me. You know, it was just Coach Smith's way that everyone was a part of the program regardless of your role.
Talking about that 95 double overtime game at Cameron, you were on the court when Jerry Stackhouse went underneath the basket and dunked on 14 feet of Duke post player, as Mick Mixon said.
Yeah.
And if you let the tape run a little bit, as Jerry goes to the free throw line, you're in the background kind of chuckling almost a little bit. How did you see that play unfold, and how soon did you know you had just seen something people would be asking you about 25 years later?
Yeah, so the way I saw it unfolding was I was running the left wing, Jerry was running the right wing, and I thought I was going to get the ball for a 360 tomahawk. And why they passed it to Jerry to this day is still a little bit of a mystery to me. No, seriously, I was going to the corner, you know, hoping to, you know, just take some space out, and suddenly I saw a play that is still being replayed 30 years later. Pretty incredible. But people forget, in my opinion, it wasn't even the best dunk of the game. I mean, Rasheed caught a few alley-oops, and then he caught one, a stick back, over 14 feet of Duke players, where he was a foot higher than both Meeks and Park, and he just jammed it home. So it was just one of many highlights.
You said you saw some stuff in practice that you didn't think you'd ever – I mean, do you have a vision or two of some things that those guys would be able to do?
Most of them was of their crotch above my head.
Visions you didn't want to have.
Yeah, you know, nightmares. You know, or if you didn't rotate over to try to take a charge, you're going to get yelled at or run sprints. So you're kind of thinking, oh, my gosh, which is worse? Getting dunked on again or having to run sprints? And so, you know, I mean, it was just moments like that. The alley-oops, the athletic plays, and some of it for Rasheed was just his ball handling and floor vision. So it wasn't necessarily – incredible plays up above the rim, though there were a lot of those. And then just Jerry's power. I mean, my junior year, Jerry's freshman year, again, I was on the blue team, and I usually drew him as I defended him a lot. And, you know, I had to put on as much muscle as my little frame could carry to just try to bang him. And my job was just to make his life miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day in particular where I literally stayed out on the floor shooting after practice an hour because I thought if I went back to the locker room, he was going to kill me. he was so mad at me because I just fouled him for an hour and a half straight. And Coach Smith was riding him because he wasn't doing so. And I did my job, but I was scared for my life.
No, Coach, I'm going to get a couple hundred more shots over here.
Turn the lights out on me. Yeah, no problem.
By the way, is Jerry gone? I'm not sure if I'm done shooting.
Pretty much.
That's one of our favorite times ACC-wise. What was the most hostile place Carolina had to go of the Reynolds, Cole, Cameron group?
Yeah. Cameron was not hostile, right? I mean, you couldn't be scared of any of those geeks in the stand. I mean, come on. Now, it was the most fun place. I mean, you can't help but love playing in Cameron. And for my 2 years, thankfully, we won both times there, so I'm happy to say I never lost to Duke.
Because Jeff McKenna said, Rashid said they were never losing as long as they were there.
And well, they were correct. I mean, they just made it happen. But it was the most fun, but it wasn't a scary, intimidating place. It was just really, really, really fun. Now, you go over to State or you go to Clemson, there are some people there that you thought might just, you know, go postal on you. Yeah. Those are crazy fans. And Maryland, too. You mentioned Cole, you know, there was more language coming out of the stands in Cole Fieldhouse than you can imagine anywhere. And I kind of miss those old gyms. I mean, Cole Fieldhouse and Reynolds and, I don't know, is Little John even still around?
Yeah, they renovated it.
So the guy in the overalls doesn't stand on the front row anymore.
Well, it's funny. One time I took the ball out of bounds at Little John. And I threw the ball in, and I couldn't get in bounds. There, three guys had my waist in the back.
Where are you going, boy?
Yeah, I was going down the court. The ref was going with him. I was back there slapping arms off of me.
Meanwhile, Coach Schmidt, Pierce, get down the court.
Man, I'm trying.
That game against Arkansas in 95 is still just one of the great, what-ifs. Jerry got hurt really early in the game. They hit that half-court shot right before halftime that seemed to really change the momentum of the game. What do you remember about that contest?
Yeah, I remember a very long streak of not scoring the basketball in the second half. And I remember that I had two turnovers. And I remember Jerry was never himself. You know, you go back and watch the tape, he tried to shoot jump shots all day. He just couldn't push off that leg with the, you know, after his injury. And I miss and you know, you look back and say it's a big regret. You know, we were the best team in the Final Four.
Yeah.
We had beat arguably the best team in the Elite Eight. You know, we were a two seed. Kentucky was a one with Rick Pitino. He had six future NBA players on that team. Probably Coach Smith's best coaching job that I had during my 2 years. And he had some amazing comebacks, one at Wake Forest, some others that, you know, I sat there and just marveled at how he brought a victory out of the jaws of defeat. But against Kentucky that night, you know, we were probably a 10 to 15 point underdog. And he just outcoached them. You know, he had a game plan that made them just shoot jump shots except for Tony Delk, and they just shot brick after brick after brick. So we were the best team in the Final Four. We should have won it all. And, you know, we just kind of had 11 to 12 minute stretch of just not being able to score the basketball, which led Arkansas back into it.
That Kentucky game is the famous Kentucky had planned their post-game party, and the game was in Birmingham, and Coach Smith somehow found out about it. At what point did he tell the team that he knew about this and, they're overconfident, guys?
I don't remember him telling us beforehand. I remember that coming out afterwards. You know, now maybe he used that as secret motivation for a couple of the guys who were going to be on the court more than me. So I don't remember knowing that before, but I do remember my parents and my wife talking about how the Kentucky fans were probably the most obnoxious fans they had ever shared a hotel or city with. It was just go blue, every hotel, restaurant, everything they went to. So I think they were just as glad for us to beat Kentucky as we were.
25 years later, don't worry, that's still the same.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah, that part hadn't changed. I know we're running a little low on time. Couple just quick things. How closely do you keep up with Carolina currently? What do you think about the current team?
Yeah.
And then secondly, you were there in August, right? For the tell us about, just from the player perspective, what that weekend was like and how you enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I'll start with that one. The reunion weekend was really special. I wasn't able to attend the whole thing because of some high school soccer games with my high school junior, but made the golf tournament, made the night's festivities, and that was the highlight. I mean, to see the court named after Coach Williams and to have several speeches given about the impact that Roy Williams has made on them as people. You know, Coach Davis gave one that I'll never forget. His son, if you guys remember, he dropped the mic after that one. I mean, he just roasted his dad in the most beautiful way of really honoring him. But to see people from five different decades, you know, come back, bring their spouse, bring their kids, share the stories, remember the highlights, the lowlights. It was a really, really special occasion that I feel just honored to have been a part of. I had no business being a part of this program again. It was a gift from Coach Smith to include me in on a couple years of basketball. as far as this year's team, you know, since my son plays on JV, we do make most of the home games, yeah, and we watch most of the away games and have for, 20 years now or whatever. And it's hard not to love this team. Yeah, the way they've come together, the way they share the basketball, the way they've bought in. I don't see a selfish bone out there on that body, including freshmen that usually take a while to get rid of their selfish bone. It is one for all and all for one. And who would have thought that this team, you know, at this point would be a legitimate national title contender? And I think that's what we are. I don't think anyone wants to play us in March and April.
You mentioned that you were a Morehead Scholar at Carolina, so you had a lot of opportunities that you had created for yourself. In what ways has being a Carolina basketball player changed your life that maybe in 1995 you didn't realize?
Yeah, well, I would say it helped me get my first job. You know, Coach Smith made a few nice phone calls to tee up some opportunities. And ultimately, the gentleman who hired me, a guy named Barnes Hotfuhr, had played for Coach Pete Carrill at Princeton in their heyday in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And my resume came across his desk, and he wasn't hiring anybody, but he saw Carolina basketball. He's a huge basketball fan. And he said, why not have the lunch? And so we had lunch and hit it off, and you know, that was the beginning of a great career in finance for me. So UNC basketball helped open the door to what has been a very rewarding and fun career full of a lot of great relationships.
Our interview with Pierce Landry brought to you by AT&T. For more of your thing, that's our thing at AT&T. While we're telling you about that, let us also remind you that if your favorite seat is courtside or upper level, you can head to StubHub, grab 100% verified tickets so you know you'll get in. After all, they've been hooking fans up with amazing seats for nearly 20 years. StubHub, official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. StubHub, be there. Also, UNC.edu is your stop to see the impact Tar Heels make every day in North Carolina. You can learn more about what is happening in Chapel Hill at UNC.edu. Nation's first public university, Carolina educates and trains doctors, healthcare workers, teachers, entrepreneurs, inventors, scientists, and so much more who are practicing and working all across the Tar Heel State. Let's go to our UNC Healthcare Know Your Stats feature brought to you by UNC Healthcare, My UNC Chart. Keep track of your stats with My UNC Chart. Visit myuncchart.com to sign up. Adam, I thought this stat was incredible. I was sitting next to Steve Kirshner on said 45-minute bus ride to the airport, and it was fun watching Kirsch. So Kirsch is like firing off numbers and stats and updating his stuff. And when he came across this one, it was just an amazing number. So Cam Johnson now. Of course, we know that Cameron Johnson has shot terrifically all season long and is leading the ACC in three-point percentage at this moment. In the ACC road game this year, the eight games that Carolina's played on the road in ACC play, 32 of 54 from three. That's nearly 60% from three on the road. That's an incredible number.
You can't shoot in the post at that percentage.
That's just a wild number to me.
Much less from 21 feet with guys all over you. It's not like he's taking them by surprise.
He just continues to have a fantastic season. And, you know, Adam, Kobe White's gone 34-28 in the last two games. I think that all-ACC stuff that we talked about last week, there's going to be a lot to consider there for those five spots.
I'm glad I don't have to vote.
Only the finest, smartest, handsomest ACC scribes will handle that for you, Adam. Don't you worry.
When do your votes have to be in? Is it Saturday night?
It is Saturday night.
Oof.
I think at 11 o'clock, maybe midnight. I'm not sure. I haven't received, like, the official ballot yet, but they give you the time when you receive the ballot of when you have to have it in by.
Does it come hand-delivered in a lockbox with, like, the person delivering it handcuffed to the suitcase?
Yes, and, like, the people from like the finance firm that
Price Waterhouse.
Yeah, they're there with us.
Then you submit it to them and they seal it.
Scan my retina.
Some candle wax.
Yeah, scan my retina, give me a thumbprint, and then it is deemed to be an official ACC vote. Adam, fire up that music, friend. because beneath the longleaf pines in the heart of North Carolina, it's a place where golf, it's more than a game. Adam, what is it?
My life.
That was a little aggressive voice for this segment. It's a way of life. A place with more courses than days of the week, more championships than anywhere in America. You know it's Pinehurst, and it's waiting for you. Adam, before we get to your list, Carolina football spring practice underway, started on Sunday, and I stopped by the first practice. I got to tell you something, Adam. It's the first time I've been in the new indoor facility. That facility is big time.
A little nicer than the old one?
Yes. It is. It is big, and it is big time. It just looks really good. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, you just walk in there, and you're like, whoa. It just, the size of it is impressive. And there was full punting, and a couple of them came close to, like, the speakers that are up on the top. And eventually somebody's going to hit a speaker or one of the lower beams. But the ones that were doing that were really good kicks. So it is an impressive facility. The outdoor part of that practice complex, not done yet, but it will be done by, I believe, training camp. And it is going to be top-notch. And it is going to be so different than what the Tar Heels had before and certainly what they've been dealing with the last 2 years as far as their practices are concerned. It's just an enormous upgrade in that regard. So that was number one.
I like how some people are mad that, well, what if a punt hits the speaker sometime? If your biggest problem is that a punt might hit a speaker in your indoor facility one time out of every 2 months, you have a very short list of problems.
The next thing that was stood out to me was how many people were there. And I don't mean players and staff members. I mean other people. And when you make a new hire, you know this. This isn't just football. This is in life. So many times you go 180 degrees, at least in some form or fashion. You go all the way to the other side about something that had gotten to the point that it was a problem previously. And fairly or unfairly, the whole thing with the injuries and I mean the disclosing of the injuries – and what was perceived as from people on the outside, people covering Carolina, fans of Carolina, what was perceived as kind of a closed-off nature to Tar Heel football had become a big deal, especially when you're losing. It's one of those things that when you're winning, everybody kind of goes, I don't love that, but hey, they're winning. But if you're not winning and that's happening, it becomes a much bigger deal. So 180 degrees the other way. Carolina's putting out twice weekly injury reports. They've already put one out before the spring or right when spring started. I don't even know if you're even on the email list, but when they were sending out the emails, kind of listed, the language in there was, we would like to make available to you these players. And it was like Charlie Heck and a couple other, you know, veteran guys. If there's anyone else you would like, please let us know. But we would like to make these, just the language of that I thought was telling. And then the amount of former players that were there. I talked to Derek DePriest for a long time, former baseball player at Carolina and punter for the Tar Heels. Gentleman Kevin, I think it was Addison or Allison, I can't quite remember.
Addison
came up and was very nice, came and spoke, had a son Cameron with him, and you know, we talked for a couple minutes, and they were certainly not the other two, but or only two, but just the two I talked to. But then there were just kind of people around Carolina who were there. Kevin Gustowitz, the interim chancellor, spoke to the team before the first practice. It was just the band was there and played like rah-rah Carolina Lina before the thing started. And then, I mean, the guys had started to get into their stretches, and Mac Brown is at midfield taking selfies with like tuba players. It's just a different feel. It's just different. And I'm not saying that the previous one was wrong or this one's right or the other way around. It's just different. And so that was fun to see. I mean, it was an event. It really was. That first practice was an event that you wanted to be seen at, if that makes sense. Now, as far as the football itself, you know, I was only there for an hour, but the one thing I watched closely were the quarterbacks, because I'm a hardcore football junkie, Adam. I will say this for Cade Fortin, Jace Reuter, and Sam Howell, who were the only three quarterbacks Carolina had.
Because Nathan Elliott, former pod guest.
Right, which we'll talk about. All three of those guys can really throw it. Their arm strength stood out to me. And even I was standing there with Derek DePriest. Derek DePriest had a good arm as a baseball player. He was like, whoa, those guys can – he's like, they've got some pop to their arm. And so that stood out to me as far as the football itself. But, yes, Nathan Elliott electing to move on with his football career. He's going to go be a GA at Arkansas State. Of course, Blake Anderson, former Tar Heel offensive coordinator, who, by the way, is going through a really – his wife, Wendy, going through a really challenging health situation. We are certainly pulling for Wendy and giving them as many good thoughts as we can, because Blake Anderson is just a first-class guy. So Nathan is going to go and be a GA over there. And I slid into Nathan's DMs after he said that he was leaving. I said, hey, man, just best of luck to you. Enjoy getting to know you a little bit, watching you play. You know, hope things go well. If I can help you, let me know something. And he wrote me back and was super classy, as you would expect. Nathan Elliott didn't have as much success on the field, certainly, I think, as he wanted, as the Tar Heels wanted. But just a first-class guy, somebody who handled himself in a very professional way, if you will. And I hope that he has success moving forward. As he told us, he wants to be a coach, and he's taken that first step, and I hope he is successful in that venture.
I certainly think he will be a successful coach. I have a hard time imagining him not being a coach.
Yeah.
The rest of it is really kind of amazing. I mean, if you would have told me 6 months ago that people would be this fired up about the first Carolina spring football practice of the year, I would have said there is absolutely no way.
Yeah.
But they are. And I think people are genuinely looking forward to the spring game event. A lot going on that day, April 13th.
5 o'clock is the game. Adam, we've had some questions about where the musical artist that night ranks on your...
Yeah, we'll get to that. I know it's easy to be this upbeat when you haven't played a game. And that'll ultimately decide how people truly feel. If Carolina goes 0-12 this year, some of the good feelings will dissipate. I don't think that's going to occur. But all you can do is what you can do right now. And the thing you said about the band and the cheerleaders being there was something I was going to point out, because I'm working on this other story about someone else.
Oh, why don't you brag about it? But keep people guessing, Adam.
They'll read it later this week, I hope, unless I screw it up. And the Children's Hospital. And several of the people who work at the Children's Hospital talked about how important it was to them that it feels like one whole Carolina when these people are here and they're all working together and they're all trying to, you know, certainly they're doing much more important things than what I do, but everybody's working together and it's one Carolina. That's what it feels like when you involve the band and the cheerleaders and the chancellor. And I'm sure there are probably professors there and former football players. People like that. It's not just the football team having a practice. It's a Carolina event. People like going to Carolina events. They like being part of Carolina. If you just give them a reason to, they want to. If you make them feel even a little tiny bit included, they want to. And so that makes a big difference. I know someone who is sort of on the fringe of football who got a letter, a handwritten note from Mac Brown talking about how excited he was about the upcoming season. Hope you'll come out to a practice. Would love to see you. He probably wrote a million of those. I don't know. But all I know about is that one made a big difference.
Of course it did.
And so everything that can be done right now on March the 5th is being done right. And that's all you can ask for on March the 5th.
Kendall Marshall was there.
What, did he throw any baseball
passes?
He
did not throw any passes.
I bet he could have.
So anyway, April 13th, and we'll talk more about that, obviously, as we get closer to that, the spring game, and 5 o'clock, but there is a bunch of stuff going on. All right, Adam, should we get to your list?
Yes.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
First on the list, as it should be, a lot of talk about Seersucker.
Yeah, there is.
I thought James Allen made a great point that he would need to see Seersucker photoshopped onto the picture of you standing at center court with Mac Brown.
Yeah, doing my dance.
In order to fully know whether or not he supports the Seersucker.
I don't have Photoshop abilities. I'm sure someone...
Oh, I know some people who do.
I'm sure someone can. You know what? That was like, that was just me getting us ready for Footloose is really what that was. Which, by the way, we have a new Roadhouse Challenge has been determined.
That's right.
Top Gun. I feel like that is going to happen soon. It's either, my guess is it's going to be next week is when we actually do it, because that's ACC tournament week. So we're not going to be able to be as fresh with the content. So I think we're
not like getting fresh with it inappropriately.
Right. Yeah. No, come on now.
Yeah.
So, but that way in the next, I this is my guarantee, Adam, in the next 3 episodes, we will have our Top Gun Roadhouse Challenge.
So I need to go ahead and watch it then.
Yeah, not including this one, but in the next 3 coming up, one of those will have the Roadhouse Challenge.
Top Gun was a blowout winner.
Yeah, a blowout winner. I can't wait. I've seen it many times, but I am excited to look at it through the lens of the Roadhouse Challenge.
Yeah, a completely different lens.
Yeah.
I can't read my writing. It definitely starts with a B.
Yeah.
She had the idea that perhaps we could have the poll as to whether or not you wear the Seersucker.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Adam. I have a feeling I know how that vote's going to go.
Yeah, you got to let the people decide. I want to give a what up to Ryan Talley. He sent us a very nice tweet. What up, Ryan? Now, you mentioned the artist performing on the night of the spring game, which in my head, whenever I read it, I pronounce as Six Black. However, it's actually pronounced Black. It says so right on this gentleman's Twitter.
Yeah.
And Megan Raby wanted to know if he is on the list of the top rhymers in the game. Not yet. However, he's got a month to work his way up.
Yeah.
21 Savage has been cleared.
No, that's good.
He's back on the list.
Yeah.
You can't keep Sav down for long.
No, it's 21.
I call him Sav, and he likes it. So we still got my boy Juice WRLD at the top.
Yeah.
21 Sav, yeah. Number 2. I'm going honorary 2.5 to J. Cole. Because a lot of people, both on the basketball team and outside of the basketball team, say he's got to be on there.
Yep.
I don't want to upset J. Cole, so I'm going to put him on there. Lil Baby 3, Duh Baby 4. Even though we know both Lil and Duh are not actual babies.
I saw this tweet from Jacob Suttles, which was thanking us because we gave him the shout-out because he had the gif of my face from the Syracuse game. But this is not what stood out to me about this tweet.
Okay.
What stood out to me is that he says, I'm very happy mostly for making the great, and then he tagged you, Adam, and then put in parentheses, the king of pod comedy. Giggle, giggle at my tweet. So, Adam, congratulations. Well, you're the king of pod comedy.
I'm only the king of one small province, whereas you're King Jones of all the land. I'm just a little Duke of Earl.
That's right. Duke of Earl. Duke of Earl. Okay.
Are you done?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Speaking of the Roadhouse Challenge, Travis Anderson suggested Hoosiers for the month of March.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That, again, I can't remember if we talked about this on air or off the air. It's set in the past.
Yeah.
It's tough to get it into the Roadhouse lens when it's intentionally meant to be old.
Yeah.
The beauty of Footloose is that they were making a modern film about the trials and tribulations that teenagers faced right at that moment. Hoosiers was set in the past, although Roy Williams referenced Hoosiers in his post-Clemson press conference on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it'll get in the rotation.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it'll get in the rotation.
It's a five-star movie. I don't know about five Roadhouses.
Footloose was...
We're going to run the picket fence.
Footloose was good.
Mary M. She didn't want to give us her full name, and I don't blame her because we're a little sketchy. Her mind was blown that Jones is not your first name.
Yeah, it's not.
Mary, get ready for this. Adam's not my first name.
Yeah, we're both middle name guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like I made the name up. It is my middle name.
It's not your stage name.
No.
Or your pen name.
Right.
I don't think that's what you'd choose if you were going to choose a stage
name.
Yeah,
it's not like I'm going by the number six and then Lack and say it's Black. I mean, it's like it is actually my name.
You could be Six Jones.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm not trying to bring the man down.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
But so it is my – yeah, Adam and I are both middle name guys.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on the whole Wu-Tang coming to Raleigh situation? Is there a way we can somehow get the RZA on the pod?
I'm going to say no.
Why not?
If nothing else, it would be awesome to have the RZA give us a see you later, Big Grits.
Yeah. I'd go over to that certain amphitheater in Raleigh and get him to do that. Imagine if we had to explain that to him. All right, the RZA, here's what we need you to do.
My name's Six Adam.
There's this fella called Big Grits. I almost think we'd have to do a full interview with him just to get to the point where I felt comfortable explaining the Big Grits story to him. I couldn't just walk in cold and say, we were at
you
a diner.
You did with Bill Walton.
Yeah, it was different. That was Bill Walton. My expectations were low. That reminds me, though. We haven't heard the Bill Walton one in a long time. We haven't heard Cooter.
Yeah.
I mentioned this to you the other day.
Yeah.
These are some classics of the Big Grits pantheon.
Well, would you like to just put a couple in right now?
Yes.
Some of the Big Grits that we haven't heard in a while.
Yep.
So why don't we take a little trip down Big Grits Lane? And, you know, we've been so fortunate to have so many great guests that we haven't really had a lot of episodes where we just needed to pick one. So let's go down Big Grits Lane and let's reminisce with some awesome See You Later, Big Grits.
North Carolina Nation, everywhere throughout the universe, this is Bill Walton, and I just want to say thank the heavens for Big Grits. That guy is better than perfect. He is awesome beyond description. We love all things Big Grits. Thanks, Big Grits, for your kindness, for your generosity, for your patience, and for my life. I love Big Grits.
I'm Joe Barry. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Kennedy Meeks. And I just want to say,
see you later, Big Grits.
I'm Lefty Driscoll. See you later, Big Grits.
Hi, I'm Coach Rob. And I just want to say hello to Big Grits.
Hi, it's Mick Mixon with the Carolina Panthers. See you later, Big Grits. We like what you're working with.
I'm Brian Tucker. See you later, Big Grits.
This is Dick Bedore. So, when I think about BG, just when I think about BG, that could mean Bill Guthridge. We called him BG. Or it could be Big Guy. I mean, Eric Montrose, he's a big guy. It could be Big Guy. But for me, right now, in this moment, BG is Big Grits, big time Big Grits. You go, guy.
See you later, Big Grits.
This is Freddie Kiger, and adios,
Grande Grits.
Hey guys, I'm Molly Sullivan, and I am so excited. I've been waiting forever to say this right here. Wait for it, wait for it. See you later, Big Grits. Heyo.
1993. Oh, you made us so happy. We loved you. You were the man. See you later, Big Grits.
Hi, it's Bubba Cunningham, and I can just say, see you later, Big Grits.
This is Leaky Black. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Rebecca Black, and I am wishing you the best weekend you've ever had in your life. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm AJ Blue, and see you later, Big Grits.
I'm Cameron Johnson. See you later, Big Grits.
This is yours truly, number 31, Dre Bly. I just want to say goodbye to my big-time buddy, Big Grits, Eric Montrose.
What's up? This is Mark from Hinder. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Farmer Brown. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Nasir Little. See you later, Big Grits.
Hi, I'm Roy Williams. We're signing off right here, and we want to say see you later, Big Grits. Oh, my gosh, Big Grits. I can't wait to see you face to face.
I'm Marvin Williams. See you later, Big Grits.
This is Mac Brown. See you later, Big Grits.
This is Jawai Williams. See you later, Big Grits.
This is Theo Pinson, and I just want to say see you later, Big Grits.
Hey, this is Garrison Brooks. I'll holler at you later, Big Grits.
I'm Chancellor Carol Fulk. See you later, Big Grits.
And this is Chad Black. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Antonio Williams. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Seventh Woods, and I will see you later, Big Grits.
What's up, Coach Monk Charles? It's Nate Brett. I'll holler at you, Big Grits.
Hey, it's Michael Carter. Just wanted to let you know, Big Eric, I agree with you. And, you know, I'll see you soon, Big Grits.
I'm David Noel. See you later, Big Grits.
Breaker one, might be crazy, but I ain't dumb. Crazy Cooter coming at you. Hey, y'all, it's old Ben Jones from the Dukes of Hazzard. See you later, Big Grits. I'm down, I'm gone.
All right, do you feel better, Adam?
I loved that. Alex Drake sent us some very impressive Photoshops.
I feel like we probably should tweet this out.
I think we have to.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
I met Alex at the 2009 Freddie Kiger event last week.
Nice.
And we joked about how you were not there. And I said, well, maybe we can just Photoshop Jones in. And by we, I meant not me, because I can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that Alex can, and he sent us a couple different versions, one of which I think we joked about that night, kind of, well, we could just put a Jones's face on a stick figure, so we got that one. But then we got full-on Classy Jones in suit and tie.
Yeah.
Long as I got my suit and tie. And as long as I got my suit and tie, I'ma leave it all on the floor tonight. And he got fixed up to the nines. Let me show you a few things. And he did. And he's sort of in the foreground as the rest of us are arms crossed in the background. Solid work by Alex Drake.
You got anything else? Because I got two quick things before we get out.
Yeah. Keela Jive wanted to know when the slide started.
Coach Williams started it at Kansas, correct?
Yes.
And I thought what I would do is ask it on the radio show. As Adam and I are recording this, I haven't done that yet with Coach Williams, but I'll plan on asking him yesterday as you're hearing this podcast now, but I'll plan on asking him Monday night that question and let him give the full explanation.
We'll see if I guess right. I think he saw a high school team do it when he was on a recruiting visit,
and liked it.
And he likes that it fires up the crowd on the road, and they get all mad, and the home crowd likes it.
Yeah.
And Coach Williams likes that kind of thing, and that's why.
Okay, two quick. Are you done?
Yes.
Two quick things before we get out of here. Got an email, and the emailer, due to his or her line of work, asked that we keep him or her anonymous, but I thought it was a fun email where the email said this person had a newish son at now 20 months old, and that this person's son really loved the music from Storytime, Mr. Goosehonkers, and The Vacation from Life. says, I'm talking full-on hip-shaking dancing. My attempts to whistling the tunes have been lacking, so I promise my husband and or wife, I would ask, is there a way to get the audio of these two songs? And he or she said that they would send us a great video of the son dancing to the music. So, Adam, the music has been sent. So we are looking forward to receiving that video soon.
Thanks for that email, Mike Krzyzewski.
CoachK@Duke.edu.
We wanted to keep it on the down low, so don't worry. We're not going to tell anybody.
We want to give a big what up to the Smilo family. It has been a wild couple of days for the Smilos as far as their Carolina fandom. They had bought some tickets to the Duke game. They were going to drive down all the way from Pennsylvania to come to the Duke game, but then realized that they had a conflict and couldn't do it, but they already had the tickets.
There's a lot of people right now going, give me the Smilo's email address.
Right. So they have sold their Duke, and they had like six of them, I think, is what Josh said. So they sold the tickets, but here's the good news. They then decided to get five tickets to Carolina, BC, so they're going to make the shorter trip from Pennsylvania to Boston to come and say hello, see the Tar Heels play, and we're hoping to get our arms crossed photo with them tonight. Smilo's longtime partners, and so glad it all worked out and that they were not shut out of seeing the Tar Heels here late in the year.
Do you think the weather's going to interfere with them?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the weather not very good in Boston. It's supposed to be better by when you're hearing this on Tuesday, so hopefully that is the case. Hmm. Adam, do you, sir, have anything else?
No.
We did have we got sent this from a couple people. Kelsey Brereton again sent us this shot of John Beilein blocking John Harbaugh as he was trying, or Jim Harbaugh
yeah,
trying to do a television interview for a Michigan game and wanted to know if John Beilein, where he ranked on the IBIS scale. Look, he's not on the scale yet because we haven't seen him.
Right.
He hasn't personally interfered with us just yet, so nothing yet. I think that's it.
And Brad Brownell, not a problem at all. He's on the other side of the court.
He was on the other side
of the
court.
Classy guy. He doesn't want to get in the way. He probably asked to move the bench.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be back with you later this week. We have another good interview. We will preview the Duke game, talk about hopefully a good game for Carolina against BC, and some other wacky stuff, I'm sure. But for now, we will let Pierce Landry and future pod guest the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I am Pierce Landry. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water sort in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.